You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to another episode of Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsoccer.com, powered by Last Word on Sports, the Beautiful Game Network, and Roughneck Scarves. And I am joined once again by my trusty co-host, Daniel Sperry. Dan, how you feeling about your dubs in Game 5 tonight?
I'm a little nervous, man. Andre Iguodala being out is it's a little concerning. They didn't look really good last game without him. If they can get the ball movement going, I think they'll be fine. But I think they, in Game 4, thought they got, like, they got their lead early in the first quarter, early in the third quarter. Or, you know, they were looking hot, and then I think they got too lazy. And judging by some of their post-game comments, they believe that this is the first time that they've been in a playoff series in a while. And I would actually agree with them. Like, it actually feels like a playoff series. Like, they actually have some competition now. So we'll see how they raise their game to that. But it'll be pretty interesting to see what that looks like over the next three games, because it becomes a best of three series. So it's going to be really interesting what happens in that. But enough about the NBA. We've got plenty to talk about on the soccer side. We've got a long show tonight.
We do, Dan. Speaking of raising your game, MLS Soccer and FC Cincinnati came out with an announcement. One of their this is becoming a meme, folks, where MLS likes to announce their announcement that they're about to announce something in an announcement ahead with an ahead of time announcement. If I said announcement enough times in there, coming next week, Dan, at FC with FC Cincinnati, Don Garber supposedly is going to be in attendance. All accounts are from everything, Dan, is that this is finally announcing that FC Cincinnati will be an expansion team with MLS. I guess technically number 26, since even though they're probably coming in before Nashville and Miami, so reportedly FC Cincinnati is going to get awarded the 26th team in Major League Soccer history. Reportedly going to start playing in 2019. Is there any? Can you see this as being anything else but that, Dan? And what do we think about FC Cincinnati in general, and particularly them coming in? You know, in what, 8-9 months?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the press release, it says Don Garber's name on there. So if Donnie Boy's coming in, it's probably just that, the expansion. It's pretty obvious what this is here. The people who have the sources with the know-it-all are reporting that it is a done deal, that they're headed there, and they're starting in 2019, and I think that is really interesting. But MLS very quickly needs to get to 24 teams, because 23 teams and constantly having a rotating off week and all this stuff is very, very weird for scheduling and annoying, and especially if you're going to do a deadline or a deadline day where everybody or decision day, whatever you're going to do it, if you're going to do something like that, have all the games simultaneously, kind of defeats the purpose. If you have one team that's already finished their season prior to that game, to that weekend, so I thought it was dumb that they only let one team in this year. But at the same time, a lot of the other teams that they had were nowhere near ready getting started. FC Cincinnati has had, what, multiple years now in there. They have a pretty well built out, like, MLS stadium that can handle games. Nippert Stadium can definitely handle some games. They handle major college football there, so I think they'll be fine for now until they get their soccer specific stadium done. But all the deals get done for them on their end to get the soccer specific stadium stuff done, and you know, now you're looking at it was pretty much just a matter of if and when, and you know, now it's done. So we've got them coming next year, apparently, which will be interesting. There's a lot of work for that front office to do, and that front office has had a little bit of interesting turnover the last couple of years, going from their first year in charge to second and third. There's been some interesting things that have gone on there. So overall, I'm okay with the move, I guess. I'll save some of my thoughts for later on it. But I think if you were going to try and put a team into the league next year, they probably, it's good that it came now, for one, maybe could have come a little bit earlier. But at the same time, you know, Cincinnati had to get the kinks worked out, make sure they had a soccer specific stadium coming in the pipeline. So overall, I guess I'm not surprised, but I'll save some of my my personal thoughts on it for later.
I'm definitely not surprised that Cincinnati ended up being the fourth finalist. Listeners, if you've been tracking this all at all, you know, we know that the four finalists going into this calendar year were Detroit, Cincinnati, Nashville, and Sacramento. And knowing that, you know, Nashville was going to be the first one, it was going to be one of those other three. I'm not at all surprised at this point, Dan. We've lamented, you know, on a number of different occasions what's gone wrong with Sacramento throughout times. Detroit just seemed it really almost cantankerous given the dynamic that you had between Detroit City FC and then the ownership group that wanted to bring the team to the Detroit Lions. They didn't look like, so totally not surprised. It ended up being Cincinnati. I'm not surprised with the timing of it being announced, Dan. In hindsight, I agree with you that, you know, you want to have even teams just because you've got one team on a go-to bye every single weekend. And of course, decision day and the penultimate weekend are kind of moot in that sense if you've got an odd number of teams in the league. That said, you know, if I'm FC Cincinnati, when Minnesota United comes to town next week for the Open Cup game, I'm doing everything I can to schmooze their executives. We saw how it worked out with Minnesota not having a whole lot of time in order to prep for stuff. I think probably the biggest criticism or the biggest doubt right now involving LAFC as a team is a function of their depth, because, you know, Bob Bradley was only in, you know, through about 1.5 transfer windows. So FC Cincinnati, what you're doing right now in order to set yourself up with an MLS team, you need to be DP hunting right now, and you probably need to get one or two good pieces signed in the summer. Now, if that's a pre-contract for somebody coming over in January, that's fine. Obviously, they've got a very stacked USL team if you haven't been following them at all, Dan. So I assume, you know, a good handful of those guys who they had, you know, who took it to the New York Red Bulls, the Chicago Fire, and the Open Cup last year, you know, they'll certainly be carrying over from the USL team to the MLS iteration of it. But we've seen other MLS teams particularly struggle in their first or second year when they don't have a full 2 years, four transfer windows at least, in order to start prepping for that move to MLS. So that front office and that GM group and the ownership group definitely has their work cut out for them in terms of this coming summer, and certainly everything that'll be going on in January. I'm kind of curious to see, Dan, given that, you know, we knew when LAFC was coming, it was, you know, more than a year out to where teams were made aware and were able to prepare for the expansion draft. I'm wondering what this means for the expansion draft. MLS has kind of indicated they want to not completely do away with it, but certainly reduce it. LAFC only got 5 teams, or if you go back to even just one World Cup cycle ago, the 2015 expansion class of New York City FC and Orlando City FC, they both got 10 players, and that was 2 teams coming in. So I'm wondering, you know, if they're just, even if it's, you know, within, you know, the next 8 months that teams are going to have to be thinking about that the league's just going to say, well, only 5 teams are going to be affected with it, so it really doesn't matter. Is that a factor at all? Am I making a big deal out of something that's not?
No, I think it is a big deal. I mean, you saw how little time Minnesota United had to work with their expansion process. Atlanta had more time, and they did a lot better job. They had the financial resources to go out and get some players that were going to immediately impact. Same with LAFC and their quote unquote expansion thing. What I'm interested to see is how soon do they hire a head coach? Caleb Porter to FC Cincinnati rumors can start heating the heck up. I'm okay. I wouldn't be shocked if that's if that's the move. I know they already have a head coach in place. I don't feel like there's not a very good history of coaches coming straight up from USL and such to go. Now, if this FC Cincinnati team goes through and, you know, wrecks shop in USL, runs the table, wins the USL Cup and wins the championship, then maybe there would be some obvious room there. But you're looking at about one full transfer window for FC Cincinnati to actually do some work if they choose not to use the head coach that they currently have. So that's going to be, it's going to be a really interesting situation here to see how the soccer decisions play out for them. And I agree. I think MLS should look at trying to go away or at least fixing and revamping the expansion draft. And I think that'll definitely change a lot of what FC Cincinnati does. But, you know, I'm afraid with with such a quick timeline and with a market the size of them and with the financial side behind them not being at the level of a Atlanta or a New York or a LAFC per se, I see this being very much a first season like Minnesota United had, like even an Orlando had, where they didn't put a whole lot of money into the team right away outside of Kaká. They didn't put in, you know, the coaching wasn't there. They just kind of went with what they had and here we go. I don't know how well that's going to work out for them if they just take what they've got and throw a bunch of USL players up to MLS and, you know, try and pick off and try and get players in over the next couple transfer windows. But the soccer decisions for FC Cincinnati now become serious, especially if they're going to come in 2019. And it's going to be really interesting. And I think it all starts with the head coach and a statement of what they're going to do with that going forward. Whether if Caleb Porter's coming in, I honestly think they should just, whoever they've got, I know they're doing well, but if Caleb Porter's going to come in, probably should can him, whoever they've got now, and put Caleb Porter in now so he can start working on that team. Because it'd be weird to have your MLS head coach kind of in the building, but not a part of what's actually going on the field for them, because it's still that same franchise. So the whole thing is going to be very interesting to see how it all works out over the next couple of months, because, you know, some teams you can sit there and you say, oh, with like Miami, you can say, oh, we've got year and a half to really see where what they're going to put this stuff into the ground. And we've got like 5 months to really take a look at what FC Cincinnati is going to do. I mean, 5 months from now, we're going to likely have be close to crowning a brand new MLS champion. And, you know, outside of two teams, very likely, 21 of them are already going to be on to their plans for the offseason. So where does FC Cincinnati start making those decisions to align themselves and get themselves caught up to speed for MLS? It'll be quick. It'll be interesting, but it sure as heck won't have a lack of entertainment.
Absolutely, Dan. I guess a few other things to think about. You know, I'm wondering, especially with the announcement that's coming this coming week, whether or not FC Cincy and the ownership group have any more revelations regarding the stadium situation. You know, they were looking at just on the Kentucky side of the river. They were looking at, you know, the lot that's potentially going to be redeveloped between Ballpark of America and wherever the Cincinnati Bengals play. You know, I'm wondering if this announcement also comes with some significant stadium news, because obviously I don't see, if MLS signing off with them, I don't see MLS being okay with FC Cincinnati being in a college football stadium that they don't have control over for their foreseeable future. Obviously, they've been talking about it. You know, there's enough smoke there that you have to think that something is, metaphorically speaking, on fire. But I'm really curious to see what the timeline, how that goes. We've seen other MLS teams benefit from, you know, you have the buzz of being a first time in MLS, so to speak. Obviously, in the immediate future, they can still play at the college football stadium, but then getting a second buzz. You know, I think Allianz Stadium, Allianz Field, whatever it is, up in Minnesota is going to bring the Loons a little bit of a boost this year, or next year, excuse me. And obviously, we've seen what Orlando City Stadium some of the other expansion cities who've come into MLS and then gotten their stadium. Let's move on to some of the bigger picture stuff, Dan. We've talked about how this is affecting the league right now, how this is affecting, how this is going to affect Cincinnati and their planning. Right now, Detroit and Sacramento, in theory, were the next two spots that MLS was considering seriously. MLS, I don't think, is going to stop at 26 teams. What does this mean for MLS expansion? What does this mean for those two cities? And I guess we can throw it in there, hashtag save the crew. What does this mean for Columbus and their potential move to Austin?
I don't know if this has anything, in my opinion, I don't think this should have anything to do with what's going on with Columbus and Austin. I think that is an elephant in the room in itself. So I think you can kind of categorize that as just completely out of the expansion picture. What I think it does, though, is it shows that, like, you know, bids got to have their stuff together. And I think that's the downfall of what happened with Sacramento. Detroit was very cash grabby, is how theirs came across, and very lackadaisical, you know, said, hey, we got a lot of money, we're going to throw this together. And, you know, didn't take a whole lot of care into the renderings of how they were going to use Ford Field to play soccer at. And of course, you know, nobody really wants to be playing on turf. So, you know, that factors into it. And there's just a whole lot of, there's a whole lot of carelessness on that end. And a lot of the other cities, you know, they're either not all the way there. They don't have the finances behind it. You know, the big thing here that I was looking at with this is a Forbes article looking at FC Cincinnati, and that ownership group, despite getting a $34.8 million package from the Cincinnati City Council, the team owners are still putting in $212.5 million, their own money, to build a stadium. So it's a significant 21,000 seats soccer-specific stadium in the city's West End, so it'll be within Cincinnati city limits. And also, they are paying, they're in charge, in exchange for the land that is owned by Cincinnati Public Schools, they are committing to build a $10 million high school stadium and to pay 25% of the property taxes it would owe if the new stadium was not publicly owned. So because it's privately owned, they're keeping the land and all that. So FC Cincinnati is putting in, and the ownership group is putting in, a significant amount of capital into what their project is. And I think that's another thing that, you know, as now, you know, MLS can set its bargaining price, and it can sit there and say, not only do we want you to pay a whole lot of money to potentially get in to the league, it also absolutely has to have the financial capital backing it and committed owners to bring in the financial capital. While some places, and then it's got to have the soccer specific stadium. They waited a very long time until April. This article is from April 17th. I believe it officially passed their city council early, within the first 10 days of April. I believe it's what, 410 is what the article that I'm looking at is on that is 410. So, you know, it took multiple things and multiple hard concrete things of money, a stadium, and a actual plan and a proof that that market can handle professional soccer for them to get in. And I think that is now going to be the asking of every single MLS team, instead of where in the past it's been, oh, you got a whole lot of money, sure, come on in. Your market is huge on soccer, come on in. You're willing to build a stadium for your team, even though this may be out in the absolute boonies, sure, fine, cool, come on in. Now they can sit there and they say, okay, what's your viable stadium plan? What's your viable business plan? How much money are you putting behind it? How's the soccer market? They can become very picky and choosy about the markets that they allow into the league because of where they're sitting now. And so I think that's what this FC Cincinnati thing shows. Cincinnati is a relatively small market compared to the other ones. I was going to pull up market sizes real quick. But, you know, both Detroit, there's plenty, and honestly, there's plenty of markets that were potentially in the running for MLS teams that they didn't choose, that had potential stadium plans but didn't have the capital, or had no history of soccer being a popular thing but had capital, or were in a small market and had neither of the others. There's a lot that goes into this, and I think this now allows MLS, you know, a Cincinnati getting in and a Nashville getting in, I think allows MLS to become, it just shows that MLS can be really picky and choosy about when and where they put markets, or put teams and markets, going forward, because, you know, they've got a good business plan going right now. And I don't think they really want to jeopardize that and end up with a potential DC United down the road where, you know, they've been begging for that ownership group to put money in for years. Even look at some of the other ones in the quote unquote have nots in MLS. And a lot of it comes down to the ownership groups not putting in capital. So I think that's kind of what this does, is for, despite a small market, despite not having a stadium yet, you know, this ownership group's willing to put in capital and to make a lot of things happen in a couple years. And, you know, MLS is really ready to jump on board with that.
Cincinnati, Nashville, Atlanta, LAFC. MLS is definitely able to be more picky and choosy. But not only that, I think every single new ownership group that's thinking about doing it, you have to have your act together on every single level. You know, Charlotte, North Carolina, just having a single rendering and a local ownership group, you know, that's saying, you know, hey, you know, if we can get some buzz up and we get some city approval, then, you know, maybe we can get something and yada, yada, yada. No, you can't have that. You have to have, so there's so many different facets to this pie. And if you don't have one of them, that's not good enough for the competition that's taking place right now. And I think that's only going to be better in terms of each new team being a splash or bringing something new or bringing something that's ultimately going to help the league. And if you're not in that, if you're not in a part of that, then you're behind the curve in terms of what you're doing. You know, obviously Sacramento Republic didn't have that. We saw a little bit of that with Detroit. I'm really kind of just curious to see what's the next market, Dan, because I don't know that there's an obvious one. You know, is there an NPSL team that's getting 15,000 people a night, so to speak? I'm curious to see where that next group is, but that next group or the next couple of teams that come into MLS that ultimately cap this league off at 28, 30, 30 plus potentially is definitely going to have their act together. And Dan, I guess I'd agree with you that I don't see I don't see FC Cincinnati and that impacting at all what's going on with the Columbus Crew. I don't see Don Garber or anybody else realistically thinking, maybe other than Anthony Precourt making the argument that Cincinnati is going to draw away from the Columbus, Ohio market and that there would be that much gain by them being in Austin, which isn't that far away from San Antonio, you know, Houston and Dallas. It was going to be that beneficial compared to the others. Dan, I'll give you the last word on here. Any other closing thoughts that we have about FC Cincinnati potentially becoming team number 26 in Major League Soccer?
I don't have any thoughts about Cincinnati, but I think the one thing that that kind of bugs me about all of this is that plenty of years ago, Don Garber went to Sacramento, sat up in front of Sacramento and said, it's not a matter of if, it's when. And I think now with about four or five teams beating them to the punch, I think Sacramento being the market that it was, I know the ownership group was didn't have their crap together quite. They still were willing, had a lot of money and were willing to put in money. They had the stadium has been approved by city council and they were basically just waiting on MLS to say yes so they could put the shovels in the ground and get going on that in the Soccer Pacific Stadium for Sacramento. So for me, I guess my question is to Don Garber, when is when for this team? Because this is a market that is a soccer rich area. The San Jose Earthquakes act as a small market team and they don't really touch the Central Valley. The Central Valley is a Hispanic rich and two a massive soccer hotbed in the United States. And to have a team in the market, which is 20th rated in the country, according to Nielsen's TV markets and all that stuff, the Nielsen ratings, they currently have MLS franchises in one, two, three, four, five, six. So right now we have six teams in MLS franchises that are in lower size TV markets in there. So like I said, my question to Don Garber now for Sacramento, if they're going to get beat out by these other teams that are, you know, flashes in the pan, in USL and, you know, they have good markets, it's fine. If they're going to be viable markets, cool. But it's just concern. And from someone who's from the area, knowing the lack of investment that the San Jose Earthquakes have done to that portion of the state, regardless of the fact that their TV rights still extend to that market, it's kind of concerning that this has gone on the way it has. And it's just to have that empty of a promise from Garber. I think it messes with a whole lot of fans in that area and continues to keep MLS out of an area that they might find some Portland level soccer value out of. So again, my last word is just a question for Don Garber. When is when for Sacramento?
Just one last thing that I'll add on this, Dan. Right now, folks, number of teams in the Eastern Conference, 11. Number of teams in the Western Conference, 12. So Cincinnati coming in potentially in 2019 balances that out. But you look going forward, Dan, you've got Miami and Nashville, who I assume will also be in the Eastern Conference. You know, I guess put an asterisk on Columbus because I'm assuming Austin, Texas isn't going to be in an Eastern Conference if Houston and Dallas are both in the West. So Chicago Fire, welcome to the Western Conference. You're about to get destroyed by Sporting Kansas City. Listeners, we'll be right back. Welcome back, listeners, to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsoccer.com. My name is Matt Pollard, joined once again by my good friend Daniel Sperry. Dan, we're talking all things U.S. Open Cup. How did you take in the round three proper, and what do you think of the round four?
Well, so I was going to to get to watch most of the round three. But I was really frustrated because I had my investment in FC Wichita. I was looking forward to them being a local mid Kansas team that had went on and beat a USL team. And then the feed absolutely sucked for that game. And the dinner that I made absolutely failed. And my wife and I looked at each other. We're like, okay, we're just going to go out to eat. So we went out to eat instead of watching most of the third round. So I didn't get to see a whole lot of it. I went back and watched some highlights. I watched the end of some of the later games. Fresno FC was down 1-0 in their game and scored an absolute banger of a goal from like 35 yards out. Like some rando guy that they subbed on just was like, oh, cool, I'm going to take a hit, and just rips one from 35 yards out, scores an absolute golazo. So that was really cool. Fresno FC is actually the closest team to me to my hometown that's in this tournament. And former Quakes and Galaxy guy Frank Gallup is heading up to soccer ops for them. So I was kind of hoping that they do well and get through, at least make something interesting out of it. And Sacramento Republic FC, so the NorCal teams, held on and got their job done. So third round proper was pretty interesting. I don't think there was any significant upsets outside of the North Texas Rayados, who ended up beating the NPSL FC Wichita. And then you have FC Golden State Force, who I forget who they knocked off, but I believe I hadn't looked at the results from it. But that fact that you've got another pro development league team that's in there is kind of interesting as well.
Absolutely, Dan. I guess I was a little, I'm not taken aback, but you're so used to the first round proper is all the amateur clubs and, you know, effectively the men's knockabout teams, for lack of a better term, in the fifth division and potentially lower. And then second round proper, you've got the NPSL teams, third round proper, USL and NASL. We can debate that order on how they should have gone in hindsight, but this is kind of weird to sort of see the USL teams in last year, but then the MLS teams not come in again in the fourth round proper, you know, with the NASL taking their quote unquote hiatus. I'm using air quotes here, folks. So I'm really curious to see at least once USL D3 gets off the ground and how that looks in terms of those teams coming in, so that you actually have a new fresh round, or you have a new fresh either level of the pyramid or league of the teams coming in every single round. So that I wasn't taken aback by, but a little bit surprised with still some really great action. You know, I still think that this is, you know, one of the most historic tournaments that you have in American football. And if we go by statistics, or if you go by the history of just, you know, which tournaments in world football have existed annually for the longest period of time, the U.S. Open Cup, albeit, I don't want to say with a little bit of help, but, you know, due to the various conflicts that have happened in the two world wars in Europe, the U.S. Open Cup proper is the fourth oldest continuous tournament in the entire world, which I think is pretty spectacular. But in any case, Dan, let's get to the fourth round that we have going on. This will be with all MLS teams, or all American MLS teams in action, folks. We'll have a Hudson River Derby as New York Red Bulls take on NYCFC. Defending USL champion Louisville City FC will be taking on New England Revolution. DC United will be taking on North Carolina FC. Dan, there's been a joke going around that MLS teams that lose in this round get railhawked. So I guess that's what we're referring to, since, you know, North Carolina FC has been rebranded. The Richmond Kickers will be taking on Philadelphia Union. Miami United FC in the NPSL, formerly of the NASL, will be taking on Orlando City. Stefan Pino, who's now with the Lions, went off on his current team last year with Miami. Atlanta United will be taking on the Charleston Battery. Minnesota United taking on FC Cincy. Columbus Crew and Chicago Fire. Nashville SC versus Colorado Rapids. Real Salt Lake and Sporting Kansas City. Houston Dynamo and North Texas. San Antonio will be taking on FC Dallas. LA Galaxy and West Coast Force, FC Golden State Force, which I think is my new favorite amateur team name in
remember the name. Cup.
Yes. LAFC taking on FC Fresno, Portland Timbers and San Jose Earthquakes, and Sacramento Republic taking on Seattle Sounders. So, Dan, I believe if my math is correct here, we have four MLS on MLS teams. What are you looking for in this round? What are you really excited to see? You know, who's going to be your U.S. Open Cup, you know, game of the night that you're super excited for?
So the one that I'm actually most excited for, if I'm like circling something as a cup set, I'm definitely circling Louisville City. City FC hosting New England Revolution playing on a baseball field with fake grass on an infield. And so when you do that, normally the grass on the pitcher's mound is different than the grass on the outfield. So you could potentially be playing across three separate different surfaces in one fell dribble down the sideline. So that's really interesting about the whole baseball stadium thing, that not a lot of people, if you don't know baseball or understand that the infield grass is different than the outfield grass, like in 99% of all stadiums. Yes. So when they cover over the dirt, they do it with like a patchy, crappy sod, that a lot of times it will overlap one of those two. So that sod that goes over the infield dirt, you could potentially be playing on three separate different types of grass or surface. That's going to be annoying for a team that plays on turf in like 60% of their games probably. And especially Louisville City is a very good team. They're a very good team in the Eastern Conference. They've made it deep in USL runs. So for me, that is like my cup set circle. One of my favorite ones. I also love FC Cincinnati and Minnesota United. That sounds awesome. Minnesota United did not start off well in the tournament. Granted, they had to go home away to Sporting Kansas City and got destroyed in the first match in their first time as an MLS team in this tournament. So that's a big one for me because Minnesota United's pretty low right now. And FC Cincinnati taking them on is going to be really interesting. You also have, I think one for me that's interesting too is LAFC. I know a lot of the players on their team are pretty familiar with the US Open Cup, but this is LAFC's first foray into the US Open Cup outside since Chivas USA time. So that's kind of interesting from them. They'll be taking on Fresno. The best outside, I mean, the two best MLS matchups are is the Hudson River Derby and then Real Salt Lake and Sporting Kansas City, which has acted as a rivalry pretty much since like 2012, 2013, basically dating back to the 2013 World Cup, or not 2013 World Cup, the 2013 MLS Cup, and then all of the World Cup happenings with Beisler and Beckerman and those guys who have been on the national team together. That rivalry kind of really brewed up, and especially between the fan bases. And I know Sporting Kansas City fans, along with like 80% of MLS, like despise Kyle Beckerman. So this is going to be a really fun matchup as well. I'm really looking forward to that one. I mean, it's one I'll be paying attention to. I will be in the Utah vicinity about a week too late, which kind of disappoints me. But this is for that game, so I could be out there. Don't get to. But it'll be really cool. There's a lot of good matchups too in here. And I think another one that I would circle, despite the fact that FC Dallas had a deep run and they have a pretty good team going on right now, San Antonio FC is a good USL team as well. They play very good in a bunker and counter match. Like pretty, that's their style. That's how they've played all throughout USL. They've got some pretty athletic players and a couple of guys who can finish. FC Dallas going to San Antonio and hosting them in that field and in that stadium, which is actually kind of loud. It's going to be a really interesting matchup to see FC Dallas on the road against a good USL side.
One of my favorite crazy things to watch in this is just see, similar to how you have, like Arsenal having to go to a fifth or fourth division team, with a small stadium and, not necessarily the best surface and, a really small locker room. Like, I'm really excited to see some of these non-MLS teams, lower division teams taking on and hosting MLS teams. Dan, I don't know how familiar you are with USL, but I think Louisville City's probably your best, solid USL market in terms of the team that's really entrenched in USL, isn't in any way on the MLS radar, but is working on growing in a non-traditional soccer market and particularly growing as well. I want to say last year, maybe 2 years ago, they came out with a plan for a stadium that they're currently working on getting private funding for. This is going to be downtown right next to Slugger Park where the Sluggers play, the current home of Louisville City. That's going to be, I think, a 10 to a 12,000 seat soccer-specific stadium. And so in my opinion, like, Louisville City is maybe the arc for every single USL team that doesn't have MLS aspirations. That's what they should be aspiring to do. And we've seen this tournament put other teams on the map, so to speak, whether it was Minnesota United when they were an NASL team upsetting an MLS team or two. I don't think we can discount what FC Cincinnati did in this tournament in terms of how they've grown their brand in Cincinnati and potentially them joining MLS, even before this game actually happens. And this game will be on Wednesday of next week. So, Louisville City, you know, you beating New England Revolution is a big deal. Nashville SC, given that you're going to be in a, you're going to be an MLS city in a couple of years, can you do something against the Colorado Rapids? You know, San Antonio, that's kind of has an interesting market. So I'm really just curious to see particularly how these non-MLS teams hosting an MLS team play, and particularly if they're able to win that game, what that does for them.
I want to issue a correction on myself because, I wasn't wrong about the infield surfaces being different, but the Louisville City game versus New England Revolution will actually not be at Slugger Field, which is where they've played most of their games. It'll be at Lynn Stadium, which is the home of Louisville University soccer. So they'll be down at the basically Louisville University of Louisville soccer specific stadium that they have. There, and that's where that game will be held. So it won't be at the baseball stadium, but it'll be at the University of Louisville soccer field.
Okay. In any case, I'm still excited about it. I've driven by that stadium. It's really, really solid. You know, I'd say, you know, like that, like if you told me every single NPSL team got a stadium that looked just like that, I'd totally take it right now. So that is just fun to see all the little crazy names. I still get giddy over, you know, hearing the Richmond Kickers, albeit that being a USL 1.0 team name. You know, North Texas FC has a really, really fun logo. You know, I will remember the Force now, Dan, regardless of what they do against the LA Galaxy. So this tournament's always fun, and it's always, like I mentioned earlier, with teams getting railhawked, this is like the round of 32 Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament, where you have like, you know, a 7 or an 11 seed, or, you know, Loyola Chicago winning a game or two, and then they have a chance to upset a team. And it's just, it's really, really fun when it's not your MLS team to be on Twitter for this round and see fans of other MLS teams lose their minds over losing this game or having it go down to a wire against a team that on paper should be completely inferior to them. So, you know, listeners, if you want to get into the insanity of the US Open Cup, if you want your hipster cred to really count, you are focused on this tournament next Wednesday and Thursday.
Oh yeah, for sure. This is going to be, I absolutely love this tournament, and I'm quite stoked for this. And like I said, FC Golden State Force, remember the name.
Okay, Dan, I think we've touched everything that we wanted to talk about from this standpoint. Why don't we let's do pick'ems on all of the MLS on MLS matchups, and then why don't you pick a cup set rail hawking to watch for? So let's start with Hudson River Derby, New York Red Bulls and New York City FC. This will be the second time they meet this season. Does NYCFC get revenge on the Red Bulls?
I don't think they do. I think the Red Bulls team is just too deep in terms of the academy kids that can just come up and slot in, and they know exactly when and how they need to play in this system, and they can just go out and go because of the way the structure of the club is. I think, you know, New York City FC, this could be a resting game for David Villa, which makes this one of those where, okay, if David Villa is not in there, this team looks very, very different and a whole lot less how do I say it? Their attack looks toothless without David Villa at times. So I am 100% on board with the New York Red Bulls pulling this one off again. I give them a 2-0 win.
Jesse Marsh loves this tournament. The Red Bulls love this tournament. They've got a whole depth. This might essentially be New York City FC bench versus the Baby Bulls, and I will take the Baby Bulls in this one 2-1, and we'll say it goes to extra time. Okay, Dan, moving on, another MLS matchup we have here. Columbus Crew taking on Chicago Fire.
I'm going to go with Columbus Crew in this one. Chicago Fire is just Chicago Fire. I don't know. For me, this one, it's pretty simple. We'll go with the Crew on that.
I'm going to say Columbus simply because they are at home. And then moving on, Dan, you to it a little bit earlier, a rematch of the 2013 MLS Cup, Real Salt Lake hosting Sporting Kansas City. Not sure if they've played each other recently in the US Open Cup, but who you got at the Riot Tee next Wednesday?
I am going to go with RSL in this one. While I like Sporting Kansas City, they're going to be on a short turnaround from Sunday. They'll have a Sunday match on June 3rd and then have Monday, Tuesday, and then a Wednesday game against on the road at altitude in Utah with potential squad rotation, as they do have a game coming up after the 3rd. Of course they have a game coming up after the 3rd, but I think they do have – it'll be one of their 3-game-in-7-day situations, which will be one of the first times they've had to do that. So I'm going to go with RSL on this one, but Sporting Kansas City have been pretty good on the quick turnaround recently this year, so who knows. But I'm going to take RSL on this one. I'm going to say it's a 1-0 grinder.
Sporting Kansas City absolutely loves this tournament, Dan. You know, there's a little stuff up right now with RSL not playing well. I'm going to say Gianluca Busio gets into this game and he scores a goal, and Sporting Kansas City gets out of Dodge with a 1-0 win on this one. And then last for our MLS, on MLS action in the fourth round proper, can Portland Timbers hosting the San Jose Earthquakes. Dan, the Quakes haven't been good and Portland's really, really good at home.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Portland Timbers 2-0. That's it. I don't.
Portland Timbers 2-0. It won't be convincing. Okay, Dan, who's your cup set of the round that you like in this one?
My cup set of the round on this one is gonna go to I gotta look at these real quick. I have my favorites that I really like, but I'm gonna go with Sac Republic going over Seattle Sounders. I think the Sounders always take this tournament relatively in recent years, and especially since Schmetzer's been in charge, they've taken the tournament kind of lightly in terms of they're going to rotate their squad through it. Sac Republic is good. They're gonna be up for it. They're gonna play as their best players. They've been playing pretty well lately in USL, so, and it's at home for them, so I'm gonna go with a little bit of home cooking and say Sac Republic beating Seattle Sounders will be my big cup set. But I will not be surprised if and when FC Cincinnati, Nashville, and or Louisville City get some shocking results and get out of Dodge with a victory at home.
Given how they've been playing in MLS, Dan, I'm not sure that we can count FC Cincinnati beating Minnesota as a cup set in this one. So that would be the obvious one to pick. I'm going to not cop out and choose that one. We talked a little bit earlier about Louisville City, independent of the playing surface, they'll have them having a potential advantage against New England Revolution. So I'm going to go outside the box in this one. I'm going to say San Antonio taking on FC Dallas. Yes, Oscar Perea has a lot of the academy kids and he likes them, but you know, San Antonio has been a really good home team in USL play this season. I think they'll be getting up for this game, knowing that it'll be an in-state rival and a chance for them to make a statement, potentially with, you know, a decent following of FC Dallas supporters in town. So I don't know if their nickname is still the Scorpions now that they're no longer the actual Scorpions, the franchise, all of the NASL days, but I'll be taking San Antonio over FC Dallas in this one. Okay, Dan, that does it for us in all of this USL. All of this U.S. Open Cup action. Any last words? You got a favorite from this pool right now as to who's going to win it?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it's hard to look past some of the perennial favorites to do it. But teams that I think another thing you can look at if you're looking for favorites and how the regions shake out, I think the regions tend to shake out for the central teams, as they don't have, you know, the better teams in the central area don't have a whole lot of good competition around them right now. So I think Sporting Kansas City should still be a favorite just as the champion, coming out of it. And then I think an FC Dallas could actually be a potential cup run favorite in this, is that I think they've got a team that's pretty good that's still trying to find its feet and may really come into form towards the latter stages of this tournament if they can get past San Antonio FC.
I'm going to agree with you, Dan. I said the central teams have a little bit of advantage. I think for me, a lot of this is just based on which MLS teams tend to prioritize it. Obviously, we know the Sporting Kansas Cities, the FC Dallases, the Philadelphia Union to a lesser extent, and certainly the New York Red Bulls. Those would be the ones that I start with. But, in general, I think this tournament to be taken a little bit more seriously, I think the MLS teams have to take it a little bit more seriously. I'm not saying that, New York City FC should be starting Dava Villa against North Carolina FC if they run into each other in the fifth round proper. But, you know, don't put out the entire B team. You know, don't essentially call up, you know, your MLS 2 starting 11 for this game, so to speak. Actually go out and try and win this game, especially if you're on the road. And then I guess there's one last thing on this, folks. As the fourth round proper, this is officially the round of 32. So MLS teams or anybody else who's left, 5 games gets you the championship. Listeners, we'll be right back. Welcome back, listeners, to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsoccer.com. My name is Matt Pollard, joined once again by Daniel Spare, and we are talking all things U.S. Men's National Team. Dan, as we have talked ad nauseum on this podcast, unfortunately, the United States will not be heading to the World Cup in Russia this summer, but we will get to play against Bolivia in an upcoming friendly at Talent Energy Stadium out in Chester, PA. Are we remotely excited about this and the squad at all involved in this game?
Meh. I mean, it's interesting. There's some interesting things that I'm going to look for. But I honestly don't really care. Apparently, they're supposed to make a numerous, like, this is in the press release. It says, following the Bolivia match, Sarakan will make numerous changes to the roster before the MNT's, men's national team's, two-game set in Europe, where they're set to face like Ireland and France or something like that at the beginning of June, just prior to the World Cup. So, I'm not going to read like a whole lot into this roster, but there's like little combinations and pairings and stuff that I'm excited to kind of see on the field and see what all of that looks like. But I don't know. I mean, if they're not taking this roster as that serious compared to their European set, then I am not going to take this roster that seriously. And I think part of that isn't due to the fact that this is not within FIFA dates yet. So none of the MLS teams have, like, they're not required to release players to this. And I think Peter Vermees actually made that pretty clear when we were discussing Johnny Russell, Sporting Kansas City's winger, being called into the Scottish national team, and also partly why we haven't heard anything about Hungary and their call-in of Daniel Shalloway and whether that's been confirmed, is because those games do not fall on FIFA dates, so MLS teams do not have to release their players to those to their countries for those dates if they're called in. So interesting on that. So I think maybe the European thing includes more MLS players, because I think there's more MLS players that are going to definitely be a part of the World Cup qualifying route for the US coming up. So that's I'll care more about the rosters for the European matches.
I agree, Dan, but there are a number of really exciting players, both some familiar faces and some faces we're still getting to know. So let's start talking about them. We'll start with me discussing the goalkeepers. We have Alex Milano from Toronto FC, Bill Hamid from that Danish club that I still do not want to try and pronounce, and Ethan Horvat from Club Brugge in Belgium. I think this is a pretty straightforward collection, Dan. You know, you've got, I would say, one of the better young American goalkeepers you have in Alex Bono, and I think his performance, despite Toronto FC losing in CCL, was commendable in CONCACAF Champions League. Bill Hamid, of course, has been the heir apparent, so to speak, in terms of the post Tim Howard, Brad Guzan era for the U.S. men's national team. And Ethan Horvath is still pretty decent. You know, I think there are better American goalkeepers in a vacuum right now. But in terms of, you know, who's likely to play a factor in the World Cup qualifying cycle for 2022, I think these three are pretty straightforward. Still only 7 caps between them, so really interested to see who's going to play between those two and where Dave Sarakan sees them and how they perform. You know, I'm at the point where I'm pretty convinced that Dave Sarakan is just being a placeholder for whoever takes over the GM job and then whoever hires that next head coach. But at the very least, you know, Bill Hamid, you know, Alex Bono, this is your chance for you to get, you know, 45, possibly 90 minutes of game film that's potentially, hopefully for your sake, going to impress that next future coach. Dan, let's move on to the midfielders. We've got Joe Corona from Club Tijuana with an asterisk. I'll let you address that if you want to. Lennon Gooch, who is back with Sunderland. Julian Green with Stuttgart in Germany. Alejandro Guido from Club Tijuana. Weston McKennie from Schalke. Keaton Parks from Benfica. Christian Pulisic, of course, from Dortmund. He'll be visiting home as he's originally from Hershey, Pennsylvania. Rubio Rubin from Club Tijuana. And Tim Weah, who just got his first start for Paris Saint-Germain. Dan, your thoughts on this midfield group? And who stands out to you?
So Joe Corona, this is my correction here. Joe Corona does not, in fact, play for Club Tijuana. He plays for Club America, the Mexican giant. So that kind of cracked me up when I saw that on the press release. I like Joe Corona a lot. I think he's a good two-way midfielder. He can play in the attack. He's definitely more attack-minded. He's got 3 goals to his name out of the midfield, and I really like what I've seen from him and his caps. I think he provides a good lesser Darlington Nagby type feel to the attack. So I feel like he's Darlington Nagby light in the types of things that he does with distribution and understanding movements, and the fact that he can score goals, and he scored some pretty good ones for the U.S. men's national team. Lyndon Gooch is interesting. His future with Sunderland is kind of up in the air as Sunderland got relegated. Julian Green has been terrible. You know, they said, oh, he's been playing better, but he was on loan to two Bundesliga team, and in like 2,000 plus minutes, he only scored 3 goals and got an assist. That doesn't really look very good, especially for a team that wasn't very good. Alejandro Guido, I have no idea who the heck he is. I haven't seen much of him from Club Tijuana. I think it's an interesting one. He's within the academy there with Tijuana. I think he's come up through that academy. So I'll have to go look and see what I see. What I think about from him. Keaton Parks has been really intriguing. He's been getting some good time with Benfica and their Benfica 2 and stuff like that. And we've seen guys like Eric Palmer Brown have success in the with the 2 team that plays in the reserve league or the second division for the Portuguese Superliga and the big teams there. As he had time with Porto 2, came back over, played really well with Sporting Kansas City at the end last year when they had some injury issues and were dealing with a lot of the World Cup qualifying absences throughout the middle portion of the season. So, you know, overall, I like this roster. Then, of course, you throw in Rubio Rubin, has been okay with Tijuana. Tim Weah has been really good in his development with PSG. And then you have Pulisic and McKennie, who I'm so excited to see together in the middle on the field. I think those are two really bright futures for the American team, especially with Tim Weah as well. We'll talk about lineups later, but I want all three of them to be in the starting lineup come this game. So I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of those guys and get going. And then, of course, you have I was about to jump into the forwards because that's my next spot, but I'll wait because we haven't even talked about defenders, have we?
Okay, yes, Cam. So let's talk about the defenders. Dave Sarakin has 8 of them, folks. Cameron Carter-Vickers from Tottenham Hotspur. Eric Lehigh, who's with Nottingham Forest. He was a big part of the Gold Cup squad last year. Matt Niazga from Chelsea, who's been on loan in various clubs in the Eredivisie. Matthew Olusunde, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, with Manchester United. Eric Palmer Brown with Manchester City. But this past season, he was on loan with KV Kortrijk in the Belgian First Division. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And then we also have Anton Robinson from Everton, Jorge Villafano from Santos Laguna, formerly of Portland Timbers, and then Walker Zimmerman, who's with LAFC. Dan, I kind of like this group. You know, it's a Euro-heavy group, and I think an upside high group. You know, I'll admit I haven't watched a whole lot of Nottingham Forest, but Lehigh's been quietly impressive and growing to me in terms of what he's done with the U.S. national team. I think we know what the hype and the report is on Matt Miazga and Cameron Carter-Vickers. Really excited to see what they can do. So, you know, it's a young group. It's a group that doesn't have a whole lot of national team experience, but it certainly has a lot of upside on the pro side. And I think definitely a group that the U.S. national team pool is going to want to continue to evaluate as we look forward towards 2022. A little bit curious that, you know, if you're going to pick one American in MLS to pick up, is Walker Zimmerman. I do think he has potential, but, you know, do you maybe want to go with somebody with a little bit more national team experience? And is a little bit older, you know, I'll say Walker Zimmerman certainly has his legs under him at this point at LAFC, and certainly is on the younger side. So in terms of being a major contributor to 2022, I just, compared to the other group that we have, what we know about Matt Miazga, you know, potentially Jeff Cameron playing a role, what we know about John Brooks, you know, do I see, you know, Walker Zimmerman, who's the second best center back at an MLS team, really being a major factor in terms of the national team? And would it be worth calling up somebody else? That's really my only one question mark. But other than that, don't have any complaints about this group. Really excited to see what any of them do collectively or individually. I'd like to see as many of them play as possible in this game. Hashtag give Sarakin actually use your subs. And last, Dan, we've got the forwards officially on the roster. Only list 2 of them. Andrijs Novakovic, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, from Reading in the English Championship. And then your boy, Josh Sargent from Werder Bremen. What do you think, Dan?
I dig this. This is probably 2 of the most promising young strikers that they've got. Novakovic had a really good season. He's not technically, he didn't play this year with Reading. He was on loan to a second division side in Holland, I believe, FC Telstar, who I believe he scored like 17 plus goals in their promotion campaign. up there. And so Redding, I'm sure, could potentially use his services. Dude's a goal scorer. He's gotten in good positions. He can finish. So that's really interesting. And then you have Josh Sargent, who's the wonder kid who they gave some play time, did really good in the CONCACAF Gold Cup for the under-17s. And he did so well that they decided that they were going to call him up to the U-20 national team for their World Cup. And he balled out, started, scored a bunch of goals. So Sargent's a really interesting prospect going forward. Has the contract with Werder Bremen. I'm looking forward to see him play and to see him start. We'll look at the potential lineups coming up later, but two very promising forwards that I'm excited to see hopefully get some extended run, whether it's together or on being subbed for each other and giving about a fair amount of minutes up top. I'm looking forward to these two.
Excuse me, Dan. I've got a little bit of the hiccups. I agree with you. So we talked all about the roster and what we think from each of them individually and collectively by positioning, Dan. What are we looking for in this game? Does the result really matter? What would you like to see from a lineup, a tactical approach? And, you know, who are you saying to, you know, who's the one player you're really trying to pick out to say, you know, show me something in this game?
Yeah, so if I'm looking, players I want to see do well is, one, I want to see the combination of McKinney and a potential Joe Corona or Gooch in the midfield, even a Keaton Parks. I think those two are really intriguing together in the middle of the field. I'd also like to see Lyndon Gooch going at players and give him a chance in the 10 spot, because he's a pretty creative player and pretty crafty, and he's got a good distribution skills. I'd love to see. I know Pulisic has been played more as a 10 in the past with the national team. In his most recent appearances with the national team, he was played mostly as a 10. But I think it'd be interesting to put him out wide, and then have him and Tim Weah either side of Lyndon Gooch in the mid in like of a 4-2-3-1 setup, or you can even go with the 4-4-2 at the diamond midfield and have McKinney as the lone guy in there. But I just want to see this young midfield, because I think that's going to be the future of this team and where they go. And I kind of want to see all of them together and see what comes of it, because there's a lot of talent in that midfield. There's a lot of potential going forward for the national team. So give me those minutes with those guys. I really want to see that going forward. I don't know if I care about the result. I just care about the optics. Like, does it look like they know what they're doing? Do they look comfortable? Are they playing good soccer? It's kind of hard to do when, you know, this, you don't know what the heck the federation is really trying to do. And Sarakhan is just trying to give dudes minutes and look at the roster and see what's going on and help whatever the heck the future is. Check out, there's a really good article by Ridge Mahoney on Soccer America. I'm kind of taking a little sidestep on this, but check out Ridge Mahoney's interview with Peter Vermees and how Peter Vermees was in talks for either of the positions, the GM or the head coach of the U.S. men's national team. He felt like there was absolutely no plan on U.S. soccer's side right now for what to do and what to do going forward. So, you know, I feel like if that's the way they're treating the current happenings, the soccer happenings for U.S. soccer, then I'm going to say that, like, I'm not expecting a whole lot out of the results, but I just want to see good optics. I want to see these guys provide, like, you know, creating chemistry on the field and off the field. I want to see these guys getting minutes and getting and coming into their own in roles with the national team that they may not be getting with their with their parent clubs. But, you know, this is a really young, promising roster that we've got here that could that has a lot of pieces that could be potentially big for the future. And I just want to see a cohesive effort against this Bolivia team.
I agree, Dan. I could not care less what the actual formation or the tactical plan is. I want to see some game plan where the Weston McKennies, the Eric Lehighs, the Josh Sargents, the Tim Weahs, the potentially Rubio Rubines and Christian Pulisic of this roster get to interact and form some form of bond, form some form of relationship. You know, Eric Lehigh, you were decent, but not that great in the Gold Cup. Show me something. Alex Mono, you know, you haven't got a cap with the U.S. Mets national team, show me something. Bill Hamid, you know, you've been the heir apparent. Show me that you deserve to take that mantle away from Brad Guzan, you know, in the Gold Cup next year. I'm not focused at all on the result, beyond, as I said earlier, you know, the fact that Dave Sarokin didn't use all of his subs, which I thought was dumb, in the friendly at Wake Met Soccer Park earlier this year. So I'd like to see as many players as possible get on the field in this one. But, you know, everybody individually, I'm just going, you know what I'm saying, show me something. Give me some highlight reel. Give me something that shows that you've made progress with your club team while, you know, U.S. fans haven't been watching you. And show something that ultimately is going to show up on a highlight reel that's going to impress your potential future coach. And we'll go from there. Dan, I guess with that, we can do pick-ems on this one. Do you even care about the scoreline? And what do you think is going to happen in this game?
I'm going to go with Christian Pulisic, gets 6 goals. Cameron Carter-Vickers scores a bicycle kick from half field, and the United States men's national team wins 1-0. I think that the second part of that is probably the most likely thing that's going to happen in this game, because I mean, I don't know what to expect out of this. There's a whole lot of – it's just a giant question mark, I think, over the whole roster and over the field. All I just want to see is it look good and look cohesive going forward, and I think that's the biggest thing that I'm going to go for out of this match, is that's what happens.
I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw on this one, Dan. I think it's going to be a lot of quagmires and a lot of flashes of good moments where you think, hey, maybe we got something here. And I think we'll be left maybe just as confused or as argumentative and befuddled as we did prior to this game. Listeners, we'll be right back with Roundtable. Welcome back, listeners, to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsoccer.com, powered by Last Word and Sports Incorporated, the Beautiful Game Network, Roughnecks and Roughneck Scarves. Excuse me, my name is Matt Pollard. It's time for the roundtable, joined once again by my good friend Daniel Sperry. Dan, how are you doing today?
I am doing good. We're back at it, man. It's been a long show, but, you know, we keep on moving on, keep on keeping on, whatever. I know. Cue song in the background, mentally.
Absolutely. Moving on, folks, it is time for our rapid fire topic. So, Dan, you get to laugh at me right now because I get to talk about hashtag Zlatan time, and not in a good way. Listeners, if you are not watching at this 3 p.m. Eastern kickoff on Monday for Victoria Day, Montreal Impact hosted LA Galaxy. It was the 25th anniversary of the first ever home game for the Impact in their current iteration, going back to the NASL days of the Impact. And Zlatan red card, Zlatan Ibrahimovic got slightly stopped on, potentially just Patrese backed up into him. He didn't particularly care for it. He decided to slap him in the face. Ishmael Al-Fath goes to VAR review it. Hands against the face has been something that Pro has been trying to crack down on. Pretty obvious that he slapped him in sort of the side face, neck, cheekbone area. Gets a straight red card. Dan, Zlatan's not doing so good with the LA Galaxy right now. The LA Galaxy haven't been that great. You know, prior to this game, they lost 4 in a row. There was a Swedish magazine that came out and said that Zlatan professionally had never lost more than three games in a row, and it goes back to him being a youth player, I believe at Malmo in Sweden, to when he lost 3 in a row. So prior to this game, Galaxy had lost more games in a row than Zlatan had ever in his club career. I think he was expecting it to be a little bit different given the LA Galaxy's pedigree, given the amount of salary that they were spending and some of the star players that they have. I think this just proves again that the front office doesn't fully know what it's doing, and Siggy is maybe not totally out of his element, but is very much an MLS 2.0 coach trying to operate an MLS 3.0. And fundamentally, this is a franchise that has $8 million poured into two players who frankly have no interest in playing for the LA Galaxy prior to Mexico's final roster decisions for the World Cup. And how well they play and whether or not they'll be sulking afterwards or want to leave the LA Galaxy will be entirely dependent on how well they play and how well Mexico does in the World Cup. Zlatan is part of the problem. I think Zlatan's trying to fix it, being a leader, challenging players, saying that they need to play a little bit better. But at the same time, Dan, this isn't Manchester United where, you know, every player, you know, according to their FIFA score would be like 70 or above. He's playing against guys in the mid-60s, guys who are in the high 50s in that sense, and he's not used to that. And he's not used to being on a team that isn't winning. I don't think that he has any excuse in terms of his frustration. I can understand his frustration, but the reality is that he cost his team and they probably should have got and destroyed by Nacho Piatti and company in the second half. Thank God Ola Kamara was able to score, but it's not looking so good. Zlatan's going to be out for the Cali Classico tomorrow, and I'm not sure where the LA Galaxy go from here, but they've got a lot of problems that are bigger and the franchise, the coaching staff, and the other players adjusting to a player of Zlatan's caliber and Zlatan's ego in the locker room. Speaking of other big egos potentially coming to MLS, Dan, we've got some updates on rumors regarding Fernando Torres, the Chicago Fire. Wayne Rooney is officially in the district in Washington, D.C., and you've got an interesting thing regarding the goalkeeper position and New York City FC. Dan, what can you think about it? What do you have for us, and what do you think about it?
Well, Wayne Rooney, as you said, stepped off foot to check out D.C. United ahead of what most are assuming that he has a contract. I think D.C. United are just like the weirdest team for Wayne Rooney to go to. You would think it would be a Galaxy, an LAFC, maybe a Miami signing type of a thing, or, you know, maybe a Seattle Sounders, or maybe someone that's looking for a forward. Heck, I wouldn't even be surprised if Minnesota went after him or something like that. So, overall, it's an interesting signing that it's all going for DC United. I don't think he fixes the significant issues that DC United have, but whatever. Wayne Rooney to MLS is going to be a whole lot of fun. The Fernando Torres, now that he's finished his season with Atletico Madrid, scored a brace in their final La Liga match, in his final La Liga match with Atletico Madrid. I believe the rumors are picking up that he is negotiating with Chicago to come to MLS. It is not surprising that Torres is on his way here. It's just a matter of which team he goes to. There's been links to Houston, Montreal, but the most traction that has actually happened has been Torres to Chicago Fire, and it seems like those rumors are picking up according to a couple reports. The best rumor, though, of fading star player in Europe to MLS is Joe Hart to New York City FC, with New York City FC paying $2 million for his services, which is very interesting when you have a guy the quality of Sean Johnson. I don't think goalkeeper is their issue. I don't know what their issue is. I don't know if they have a
issue. They don't have any issues. They're the best team in MLS, if you ask me.
Yeah, I think it's just funny that, oh, here, we're going to go get Joe Hart. Okay, if you want to pay 2 million euros for him and do all that, history has shown in MLS that if you're going to pay through the nose for a keeper, it's probably not going to go well. Out of the three teams who are paying through the nose for a keeper, which is above 500,000, two of them are pretty miserable, with Colorado Rapids and Philadelphia Union, and then you have Brad Guzan, who's in there with Atlanta, and that's just the benefit of the fact that he's in a very good system in a team that's spending money left and right on everything. So I don't know. I mean, it's interesting how they're going to make this work on their roster if they are going to go get Joe Hart, but Joe Hart to NYFCFC just seems like overkill considering the fact that they got Sean Johnson, who is a heck of a goalkeeper in his own right.
Completely agree, Dan. Just looking in here, apparently Joe Hart's first name is actually Charles. I think that's interesting, and certainly he didn't have that great of a season with West Ham. Still officially under contract with Manchester City. Don't think that he's going to be starting for Pep Guardiola anytime soon. Moving on, Dan, we've got a little bit of rumblings. Joey Saputo is definitely one of the more vocal owners in Major League Soccer. He didn't come out and openly put on, if you go on Twitter, if you're reading any articles, people think that he openly put Ignacio Piatti, their DP number 10, and their captain on the chopping block. If you actually go to the exact quote, he said he didn't want to start any rumors, but at this point, given where the team is at right now, you know, they lost six of their last seven, and it's not looking like it's going to get any better anytime soon, that no player is safe at this point, which in theory, you know, the one big commendable piece that they have that would be able to get them a bunch of other assets and maybe kickstart the rebuild would obviously be Ignacio Piatti. He's 33 years old, Dan. That said, he's probably one of the best number 10s at Major League Soccer, but he is in contract with Montreal for all of 2018, 2019, and there's a team option for 2020, reportedly around $4.5 million this year if the MLS player salaries are to be believed from the players union. I think there is a market for Ignacio Piatti in the summer. I think this could potentially be one of the biggest trades in terms of total acquisitions from one side in a single player trade. I'm just not sure, you know, what teams are going to bite on him given You know, that, you know, what team is he going to be willing to go to, you know, with all the assets that Chicago Fire potentially spending on? Would they rather chase after him as opposed to Fernando Torres? You know, I look at, like, the LA Galaxy need help offensively. The, you know, if one of the Dos Santos brothers, you know, moves, does that open up a DP spot and some cash for them to splash? You know, say Atlanta moves Miguel Amarone in the summer potentially. But if, you know, if you go teams that Ignacio Piatti would be willing to go to, teams that have a need for a number 10 that need to win now because Piatti is 33 years old, you're saying that you're a Piatti away from being a contender this year and a contender next year. And then you're saying a team that also has the assets to where they would be able to give Montreal what they want without totally blowing things up or shaking everything up or losing half of their identity just to get this one player, you know, really other than Chicago having to spend a whole bunch of money. You know, I don't know where that market is. You know, is Seattle willing to spend on that for a guy in league? Does Piatti really want to play on turf in the Western Conference? I think it's interesting. I think when a guy of his caliber is available, I think you will get calls. I think they will get flyers. I'm just not sure where he's going to end up right now. And given that he's 33, you know, do I see him in the Dom Dwyer, Ola Kamara level acquisition? Do I see him more as a Justin Meerum, you know, Darlan Tignagby in terms of assets? I just don't have a sense of market and the competition for him, given how much money he's costing Montreal, how much he's potentially going to cost his new team in MLS, and given his age. Moving on, Dan, we got some word that Jeff Kane potentially looking to go back to MLS. Of course, he will have some options to either stay in Stoke potentially or go to another Premier League team. Excuse me, my hiccups, Dan. What can you tell us and what do you think about it?
Jeff Cameron is apparently he's coming to MLS. So that's the reports, that he's interested in coming to MLS. He would have to come through via allocation. And of course, the Los Angeles Galaxy in dire need of anything that can remotely stand in front of a goalkeeper and attempt to defend.
Not be a traffic cone.
Basically, they're in look for anything that can do that. Jeff Cameron is a pretty good person that can do that, although he's going to cost a lot of money. And I think the LA Galaxy, if they were smart, would sell off their top allocation spot for some nice assets that they can go and do some roster tinkering with, or they can go do a few other things. I think there's a couple other teams that could potentially use him. But if I am Jeff Cameron, I am saying screw you to MLS because, you know, for some reason he thinks that MLS is at fault for, comments he's kind of made that sounds like he feels like the MLS thinking was at fault for some of the U.S. World Cup qualifying failures. So I'm going to go with Jeff Cameron. Stay in England and go to Huddersfield, hang out with Wagner and Bobby Wood at Huddersfield FC, which would be pretty fun to watch. So I'd be okay with that. But Jeff Cameron, gotta stay. Don't come to MLS, dude. Just stay. I am not a fan of, you know, if people want to make their career, stay in MLS and do their career that way, cool. But I don't want to see, what I don't like seeing American players use MLS as a cash grab after they've worn out their welcome in Europe. And especially players at the latter ages of their career. Josie Altidore went to Europe and it didn't work out. Came back to MLS, turned into a badass, was still a badass with the men's national team. No problem with that. If Jeff Cameron's going to come in and continue to be a badass with the men's national team, then fine, by all means, go ahead, come back. But, you know, if I'm Jeff Cameron, I'm still looking to stay in Europe, man. That's where, you know, he got out of MLS to go make a career, and he made a solid career out of his time at Stoke. It's unfortunate that the rest of that team wasn't up to snuff. And, you know, maybe even him himself wasn't up to snuff to keep the team up into the Premier League. But, you know, Huddersfield are fun. Wagner's fun. I really like watching Huddersfield go about business, and you know, they got a little interesting feel to them, and I think Jeff Cameron could fit in pretty well there. So my wishes are that Jeff Cameron goes to Huddersfield, not to MLS, period. Not, and that doesn't have anything to do with the LA Galaxy having the top allocation spot. I just think it'd be better. I like seeing Americans in Europe and doing cool things in Europe. And I think Huddersfield have the potential to be a Burnley style club that, you know, get up kind of above that mid-table feel in the Premier League and potentially push on for even Europa League spots and make deep cup runs. I think they've got that potential as a team, and I think it'd be cool to see him as part of that in the coming years. So, yeah.
My desire would be also for him to stay in England, Dan. I don't know if I have a preference in terms of him, you know, going to Huddersfield, going to another team in the English Premier League, or staying in the Championship either with Stoke or going with another team that's maybe in need of a veteran centre-back for, you know, 2 to 3 years. I think the question for me is all about this on the economic side. Obviously, Stoke's getting relegated. There's going to be a significant drop in the amount of money that they're going to be making from the, you know, TV revenue sharing going from the Premier League to the Championship. Are they trying to cash in? Is Stoke trying to immediately get back and get promoted this next year? In which case, then, you know, if they're looking for any player to leave, do they want to sell off assets and get money for them? So would they want a transfer fee from Huddersfield? Obviously, Cameron is going to have a little bit more stock being an American and a national team player in MLS. Is Stoke going to want a significant transfer fee in that? And what kind of salary is Jeff Cameron going to want? You know, he was making pretty decent start defender Premier League money. I don't know that economically makes sense for any team in MLS to spend that kind of money on a team, on a center back, excuse me, you know, either as a DP, potentially the TAM player, or moving around other assets, even if we're able to get him in the first allocation order. So I guess my first two questions on this is, if he is leaving Stoke, does Stoke want any kind of compensation, and what does that number look like? And then if Cameron wants to come back to MLS, what's he looking at from a salary standpoint? You know, other than Liam Ridgewell for maybe, you know, the 2 years that he came in with the Timbers and helped them win MLS Cup, you know, I guess Omar Gonzalez barely, I don't know that there's been a seven-figure, that there's been a defender in MLS that's been worthy of seven figures, or that even, you know, has really made sense to have that money. So if you're spending $2 million on Jeff Cameron as a center back, I don't know that that makes sense. You know, if it's anything more than that, definitely not. If you got to give Stoke $1 million or $2 million, it doesn't make any sense. So kind of similar to the Bobby Wood situation, it just, you know, how much total economic investment is the team going to have to put in, and does this even remotely make sense? And so, you know, if Stoke says, hey, we'll have you come over on a free, or, you know, we'll just let you out of your contract, or, you know, hey, you know, Houston Dynamo or whoever, you know, give us, you know, a menial transfer fee, okay, we can have that conversation. And Jeff Cameron says, you know, I'm willing to be a TAM level player, then we can have that conversation. But if either of those questions are no, Stoke wants multi-million dollars, or Jeff Cameron wants to be in the DP range, this just doesn't make any sense for me economically for any team in MLS at this point. Okay, Dan, let's move on to pick'ems before the hiccups completely destroy me on this podcast. We've got an Unimas doubleheader on Friday, May 25th, folks. This will be starting at just before 9 p.m. Eastern on Unimas. Houston Dynamo hosting New York City FC. Dan, who you got and why?
I'm going to go with a one-all draw. No, I'm going to go one-all draw. How the heck can you expect one goal apiece from Houston Dynamo and New York City? I'm going to go with I'll go with a 3-2 Dynamo win. I kind of like the way the Dynamo have been playing lately. They're at home. Albert Deliz has been playing awesome all year long. Ramel Kyoto as a starter has been really good in the attack on that side, replacing Andrew Wenger, who I thought was fine. But, I mean, Kyoto, when he's playing, is really good. So I'm down with that. What the Dynamo have been doing lately, New York City FC haven't been as good as of late, and Houston Dynamo have played pretty well at home. So I'll go with a 3-2 Dynamo win.
I'm going to agree with you, Ken. I guess the one variable I would put in here, with all of the rumors swirling around Patrick Vieira, and is he leaving, is he staying, where is he going and everything, whether or not that's true, whether or not anything that's actually happening, or what he's told his players in the locker room or during training, you have to think that somewhere in there psychologically that's affecting them. New York City have seen one of their longer drips than they will have had so far this season. Houston Dynamo are playing great. I'm going to say a 3-2 barn burner, Wakanda forever. And then moving on, Dan, I think this caps off a crazy two-month period in the Dan Matt Derby, the first Clasico of 2018. No Zlatan in this one, but LA Galaxy hosting San Jose Earthquakes at the Stubby on Unimas, 11 p.m. Eastern. Dan, who you got and why between these two teams that are bad and should feel about it?
I'm going with the San Jose Earthquakes. I think it's really interesting because Mikel Staré took full responsibility after they got wrecked at home by DC United, took full responsibility for what happened tactically with that, and said it wasn't, you know, he's upset with the result, and he took responsibility for it, and that he didn't prepare the team correctly. And I think there's going to be an onus on him to get it right again. Jameer Hika not being out there to play on the wing has been a huge problem, I think, with the attack. When he's playing and going right, they're a really good team. So if they can get him back from injury, I will be excited to see that. I think overall the effort was bad from the Quakes on the weekend, and they're going to look to push up. The Galaxy are on short rest. What about 4 days rest? Well, the Quakes will be on 6. Don't know how much that has to do with it, but, you know, Earthquakes have had the Galaxy's number the last couple years in the Cali Classico, so a bad LA Galaxy without Zlatan, with that, with a lot of the issues that they've had, I'm going to go. It's a battle of bad defenses, and I think the Quakes' bad defense is actually a little bit better than the Galaxy's bad defense. So I'm going to go with Quakes in this one. I'm going to go with a 3-1 win for the Quakes in Carson, and I'm going to go with Chris Wondolowski getting a brace and getting that much closer to the all-time record.
Of course. I'm going to go with a boring one win on this one, Dan. I agree with you with all the criticism you had about the Galaxy and about the San Jose Earthquakes. I think given what the Quakes had in that 3-1, you know, drubbing against DC United that nobody saw, including my fantasy team, I've got to expect a positive response from them, and I've got to expect the Galaxy to get a little bit fired up after they got off the snide against Montreal, albeit under precarious situations. I think, ironically, you know, no Zlatan and no Dos Santos brothers, potentially, depending on when the Mexican national team is going to want them. You know, that could be end up being addition by subtraction, just because it's going to force Ola Kamara up top in more of his natural role, even though, you know, people are going to say, oh, Ola Kamara has been put out to the wings since Zlatan's come in, and he scored 4 goals in 5 games since that's happened. All of his goals have come when he was rotating up top to be in a center forward position. And, you know, formation is shorthand for tactics, so I don't buy any of that. I think it's going to be, you know, addition by subtraction in terms of their offensive production for Ola Kamara. I think without Zlatan, the team is actually going to have to rely on doing something rather than passing to Big Z and assuming that he's going to get something done. That said, I don't have much faith in either of these teams, Dan, either in their offensive consistency or in their defensive quality. I think it's going to be competitive, but it's not going to be exciting, and it's going to be a 1-1 draw. And I'll say the goal for the Quakes will not be from Chris Wondolowski. Moving on down, we'll have one of our rarer pick-ems that we've had. Final is coming Saturday, folks. For those of you living under a rock, it'll be from the Dynamo Kiev Stadium in Kiev, Ukraine. Mo Salah and Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool FC are taking on Real Madrid, Cristiano Ronaldo, Gareth Bale, etc. Real Madrid going for the first ever three-peat in the history of Champions League. Dan, I cannot talk right now. I apologize, folks. Liverpool, of course, going for their first championship of this century. Dan, who you got and why?
I'm going to go with Real Madrid. One, because I hate Liverpool. Two, because I think Real Madrid, their star power is more than what Liverpool have had to face at any point in the knockout stage of this competition. I love Mo Salah. I love what they've been doing. I really do actually think that Liverpool are incredibly entertaining. But you know, this game screams a barn burner that Real Madrid just eke out just because they've got enough quality. And you know, Liverpool tend to deal with counters or to not be, to get caught out hard on the counter. And I think you look at guys like Bale and Ronaldo, Benzema, the others, Marco Asensio, when he gets going, and then you have guys like Kroos and Modric and those who could feed the ball in. This Real Madrid team can attack at you very hard, very fast. So I'm going to go with Real Madrid in this one. They're going to get the three-peat. I'm going to say it is a 4-2 win over Liverpool in this matchup.
I'm going to agree with you, Dan. I will believe that Real Madrid is not the best team in these finals in Champions League when it actually happens. Even though Mo Salah has been absolutely fantastic for the Reds, Cristiano Ronaldo is still the best player between these two teams. And it will take me having to see Real Madrid lose in Champions League for me to believe that they are not the favorite and the assumed winner of it. So I'll take Real Madrid. I'll say 5-3. It's going to be a lot of offense. Mo Salah is going to be pulling stuff. People are going to have their ankles broken. There will be nutmegs, but ultimately, I think you know, the claimers of La Decima will be getting the first ever three-peat in Champions League history. And then lastly, Dan, moving to Sunday. This will be on FS1, the lone national TV game of Sunday, folks, May 27th. Sporting Kansas City hosting Columbus Crew, 6 p.m. Eastern. Dan, I assume you'll be at this game. What are you looking for, and who you got and why?
So I am looking for Team Lebo, but to to upset Team Rodriguez or whoever the heck we're playing in the media game, because that's the only part I care about. We've got our annual media game will take place in this game against at the halftime of this game against Columbus Crew. I will be on Team Lebo. Todd Lebo is a local radio host. He's our team captain. We're doing it. Actually old style MLS shootouts. And so if you go back to before Don Garber took over, the MLS was deciding games with a 10-minute overtime period and then a shootout, and they were dealing in absolutes. It was a winner. It was very gimmicky, and it was an NHL style shootout where the goalkeeper started from his line, a person with the ball started from about 35, 40 yards out. Referee blew the whistle. He grabbed the ball and they went. And the ball could only move forward or side to side, could not move back. You only get one actual shot. You could lift it over the goalkeeper and do whatever. So it was a whole little skills competition, a 1v1 with keepers and players. It was a whole lot of fun. So we're going to get to do that at halftime to decide our media game, and I am on Team Lebo, and I'm going to score a goal, I hope. But no, really, in this game, this is going to be a really interesting game because you've got two of the better soccer minds in MLS, in Peter Vermes and his evolution in playing style with Sporting Kansas City, and then you have Columbus Crew, who are extremely adaptable. Berhalter can put them in any type of formation, any type of game set, and he can switch it up at any point in the game, and they do well handling whatever is thrown at them. I just think this is going to be a really intriguing game. I don't know if I see a winner in this one, because I do think this Columbus Crew team is strong, but if Sporting Kansas City get an early goal in this, Sporting Kansas City get up 2-0, I think this game is over for the Crew, because Sporting Kansas City have talked so much about the fact that when they can get up 2-0 in a game, then that forces a team to come play and try and get another goal if they're going to try and get back and get a result out of this game. Most teams aren't going to sit back and bunker when they're down 2-0 unless it's, you know, an absolute minnow side. So, you know, Sporting Kansas City, I think, will be looking to take care of business at home, but I don't know if I see a winner in this one. So I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw in this, Sporting Kansas City and Columbus Crew.
I'm going to agree with you, Dan. I think this has the potential to be the most exciting draw of the weekend in terms of the MLS game. I really like what the Crew have been doing. You know, it was not pretty last weekend at New England Revolution, but they gutted it out and it worked. I think the defense has started to figure itself out. The offense has certainly been there. We know of Pedro Santos, Pipa Higuain, you know, the resurgence of Gioski's is what that's going to bring. Sporting Kansas City is the best team in the Western Conference by a country mile. We know what they're going to do defensively. Obviously, there's going to be a really interesting fullback matchup with what Graham Soucy's out there at right back. But I'm going to say it's going to end up being a 1-1 draw. I think that in performance and in X goals and all the other metrics, Sporting Kansas City will be the better team. But I don't know if they're going to create that much more offense against Will Trapp. I look for Columbus to maybe nick something on a set piece or a counter, and it's going to be a really compelling, exciting 1-1 draw. That does it for us for our pick-ems and overall in the night show, Dan. It's been really, really long. Yep. Last words, and where can people find you on the Twitter machine?
So now, last words, since I've rambled on enough tonight, you can find me on the Twitter machine at SperryDaniel94. I will be at the game. I won't be able to cover it for Last Word on Soccer, but I will be tweeting about the game, and I will be having some fun out there in the media game. Stay tuned to see a video of whether or not I score in this media game in our media shootout, so that'll be really intriguing to see what happens. I'm excited. I actually stepped foot at Children's Mercy Park on the field there the other day, and I'm quite excited to actually step foot with a soccer ball out there and have a chance to score a goal. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to this weekend. Pay attention. There's a lot of good soccer starting. I mean, this right now, this weekend starts up a whole lot of soccer. So stay tuned for all of that.
Excellent stuff, Dan. Listeners, follow me on Twitter at LWMap. Check out lastwordonsoccer.com and follow us on all social media platforms at lastwordsc. Shout out to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier for Major League Soccer, the United Soccer League, and U.S. Soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group, your team, or just yourself, excuse me, at roughneckscarves.com. My last word, Dan, we didn't talk about it, but Tim Ream and Fulham FC will be in the English Premier League promotion playoff, one game, winner take all at Wembley Stadium. This will be at 10 noon Eastern time on Saturday. It will be on ESPN And plus, for those of you who have winner take all between Fulham and Aston Villa, definitely rooting for Tim Ream in this one. Come on, you Whites. Let's go, Cottagers. Listeners, we'll see you next week.